KALW. From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Sunnyvale, South Bay.
I live in Oakland, California.
Concord.
Parkside.
San Mateo.
I live in Alameda.
Marina.
Currently living in the Mission District.
Coming up, Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf is running for re-election. What is she prioritizing?
My number one every day is fighting displacement.
Then we hear about what it's like to be granted parole and then having to wait.
I've been feeling miserable for someone who's possibly going home soon after being in here 40 years. That shouldn't be.
And we'll hear from a lifer without the chance of parole.
Do you ever lose hope?
No, only hopeless people lose hope.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. Libby Schaaf won Oakland's seat for mayor 4 years ago. Since then, the city has experienced some major changes, from a rise in homelessness to a tech and real estate boom, plus multiple NBA championships. Now, Mayor Schaaf is campaigning for re-election, and she's up against 9 other candidates. KALW's Janae Darden met up with Mayor Libby Schaaf in a peculiar place. They spoke about why the mayor wants to keep leading the city.
So I am in the back of Mayor Libby Schaaf's minivan because the other place was too echoey where we're going to interview. So you're in a position where, you know, this money is coming in, you know, with tech industries, but there's also people suffering on the streets. How do you work with both of those communities?
No one deserves to spend a single night on the street. And I'm very clear with people. These are not drifters. These are Oaklanders. These are people who have lived in our city for generations. And to be surrounded by so much wealth and that stark contrast of more and more people living on our sidewalks is offensive. It is a moral outrage.
Okay, so there was that building that's $8,000 a month to rent, the units are. And I know you said that, you know, you support market rates when it comes to real estate. However, I know some people felt like who are struggling, they felt some kind of way about when you said that.
I'm very clear that my number one work every day is fighting displacement. And market rate housing is one of several strategies to do just that. Because the people who are moving into Oakland, they can afford the pricey new housing. And if we don't build it for them, they are pushing out people who are here now out of the existing housing. We've got to expand the supply of housing. And because now we've got impact fees, we've got more protections, we've passed bonds for affordable housing, some of that construction is actually generating either affordable units in the building itself or a payment into our affordable housing trust fund to build more housing elsewhere.
So the Tough Sheds, I know it was approved for the Tough Sheds to be built by the Henry J. Kaiser Center. What is that going to look like in the near future, and what's the next steps after that?
Okay. So the Tough Sheds are an emergency intervention. It is the fastest, most cost-effective way we have figured out to get people off of the streets and into safety and services. I've been so touched by what I've heard from the Tough Shed Cabin community members themselves about how much comfort it's given them to move into this improved situation with the knowledge that this is a temporary stop on a road to self-sufficiency and permanent housing.
Since we're talking about the streets, another issue is dumping. Mm. I know you said when I saw you at the Allen Temple debate, you said you talked to the DA and she said she didn't have the bandwidth to prosecute people because the dumping is just so, there's so much. So what can be done and what have you done? I know you have a block party, and can you talk about that too?
Sure.
Not like a block party, but.
Call it the bulky block party.
Yeah.
We are approaching the problem with the traditional 3 E's, which is increasing the eradication. We've expanded our dumping crews, so we're picking up more faster. We're not waiting for people to call to complain. We know where the hot spots are, and we're just going to pick them up. We're increasing enforcement. We have 4 cameras out. While it's been a little disappointing, they haven't caught more people. And believe me, when I called the district attorney and told her that her staff had said that they don't have the bandwidth to prosecute the cases that we brought them as a result of those cameras, she said that she will make sure that the bandwidth is found. So she she herself had a reaction to that news. And then finally, it's education. And we've got to do more to make sure people know that this is unacceptable behavior. I believe that the service model we have with waste management is not working. And that's why we brought the bulky block parties to Oakland. And they have been hugely successful. 3 Saturdays where Oaklanders could come between 9 and 1 with as much junk as they wanted, not worrying how many cubic feet it was or whether it had 2 or 3 tires or how many mattresses. Just bring whatever you've got. We help you unload it. We don't charge you a cent. And you can be on your merry way. We had more than 1,000 Oaklanders take us up on that offer.
I want to talk about art. So what have you done and what do you hope to do if reelected to keep more artists here? Because a lot of artists I know have left because they can't afford to live here.
Oakland isn't Oakland without its artists. So one of the things that I think I've been good at as mayor is hustling other people's money. And I was very pleased to bring several $1 million in philanthropic money to really preserve the artist community in Oakland. We are in the process right now of bringing back the Cultural Arts Commission, as well as bringing in these new funding sources to really look at art spaces, to look at how our zoning codes either harm the creative community or help it. We've already put forward legislation, for example, to change the cannabis regulations because we saw cannabis warehouses pushing out live-work folks. And, you know, I hate talking about one of the hardest things that's happened for me as mayor, but the ghost ship tragedy. But to come out of that moment with a very clear directive that we have to balance life safety with housing security for our creative community.
You have talked about how you are going to stand up to Trump and protect the city from Trump. What does that look like for you?
Well, it makes my lawyer and my husband very nervous.
Oh, no. And we are in your minivan. Your husband wants to keep his minivan in your house.
He's like, honey, could we have discussed this before you did something that could have landed you in jail? I'm like, no, that's not our relationship, sweetheart. No, seriously, this is the time. I mean, everything that I struggle with as the mayor has its roots in institutionalized racism. Institutionalized oppression, everything. And so if I can't stand up to that when it is coming from the highest office in the nation, I have no business being the mayor of Oakland.
That's Oakland Mayor Libby Schaff speaking with KLW's Janae Darden. The mayor is running for re-election against 9 candidates, and we're conducting one-on-one interviews with all of them. Find the links at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Our next story is from our partners at San Quentin Radio.
San Quentin Radio, bringing you informative educational stories from the inside out.
In order to make something grow, you got to own a little dirt.
You don't tell, you see what goes on.
Because I like to be free. I like to move about the land.
You could hear a pin drop, and all of a sudden you heard this.
When people are sentenced to prison time in California, they'll either serve a finite period, like 7 years, or an indefinite period, like life with the possibility of parole. If they can demonstrate good behavior in prison, incarcerated people can be eligible for a parole hearing to decide whether they might be released with certain conditions. But being approved for parole doesn't mean someone gets to go straight home. There's a catch. From San Quentin Radio, Nathan McKinney reports.
Imagine, after spending 10, 20, even 40 years in prison, and you've done your best to stay out of trouble, you toe the line. You do the work by taking classes on rehabilitation. You've changed your violent behavior. You go before the parole board, and they agree. You've changed. They grant you parole. You're finally going home. Hallelujah, right? Not so fast. The governor has 150 days to decide if he'll take your parole date or let you go. This causes a great deal of stress for the men waiting on his decision.
My name is Billy Fuller. People know me by Fahim. I've been in prison for 40 years.
On December 17, 2017, Fahim was found suitable for parole. But that doesn't mean he'll be going home.
It causes a lot of anxiety because you don't know what could happen. You know, even though they find you suitable and tell you you have a chance of going home, you still have the stress of waiting through this 150-day governor's review period. And the reality is that you're not going anywhere until it's approved, so anything could happen.
The thought of the governor taking one's date is not easy for some.
It wouldn't crush me. After all this time, I mean, it's something that I would be able to deal with very easily. I wouldn't want to, but it wouldn't be a problem for me because it would be reality. And at this point in my life, you know, it is what it is.
Meet Eddie. He was given a parole date, and now he's waiting on the governor's decision.
My name is Eddie Herrera. I've been in prison for 13 years, and on March 6, 2018, I was found suitable for parole. My mom would be crushed. If the governor took my date, it would break my mom's heart all over again. If the governor does take my date, I would be hurt, you know? I would be hurt. It would hurt. I'll probably cry. But then I would sit back and realize, hey, man, this is, it's all part of the, it's a choice I made a long time ago, and this is part of it. You got to live with it and move on and keep, you know, continue to stay positive and continue to grow as a person.
It's been almost 120 days since Fahim has received a parole date, and his emotions are getting the best of him.
I've been feeling miserable. For someone who's possibly going home soon after being in here 40 years, that shouldn't be. The last thing you should be doing is feeling miserable. You should be elated, but that's not the case. You know, I'm very sleep deprived. My appetite is bad. It's just the stress of this governor's review period.
Most likely the governor's decision is in. Fahim could contact his counselor for the answer.
I don't know. It's just scary. You know, it's just scary to walk in there and find out whether or not he took action. When it's just easier for me to just wait. And even though it's stressful and it's causing me a lot of anxiety, it would cause me even more thinking about walking into the counselor's office to find out whether or not he took action. It would be better for me to just wait it out and pray, and hopefully I get to walk out of here.
While Fahim is toiling with the prospect of not knowing what the governor will do, others express how it feels to have their dates taken away.
Alan Robert Fredericks. I am 55 years old. I've been incarcerated since August 28, 1983. When the governor had taken my date, I was told previously to this that there was a 50-50 chance he may have taken it. And the reason why was because at that time, the governor had stated that anyone that was in prison for murdering a woman, a child, or on a second offense for murder, he didn't want out. And my case is I murdered a woman. Somebody had mentioned before about how does it make me feel about the governor taking my date or suitability. I initially told everybody that everything was fine. And what it was is I was still in my prison man box and didn't open up. After about 3 months or so, then I started opening up, letting people know that it wasn't fine. But I was very depressed. The process was unfair. I had done everything they had asked me to do. He took my date because he felt that he didn't believe my version of the crime.
My name is Albert Alvin Williams. I'm 69 years old. I've been in San Quentin prison since 1980. I was given a date in 2014, and he used a 10-year-old 115 to take the date. And I couldn't understand his reasoning for going back that far when I went to the SHU for the 115.
A 115 is a rule violation report, and the SHU, S-H-U, is short for Segregated Housing Unit, a.k.a. the hole.
I felt that the governor didn't know what he was talking about because the issues that he raised to take my date, it was confusing to me. I couldn't understand how and what gave him the reasons to do that. It was so confusing. I think at that particular time, if I was to think back now, I think my first feeling was that, man, I'm not never getting out of prison. If it's that simple, I'm not ever getting out of prison.
The day Faheem found out the governor was not going to revoke his release date, he showed up at my cell in tears. He had the papers in his hand that said he was going home in about 10 days.
But once, now that it's final, I mean, all the stress is gone. Now I'm a little afraid, I'm a little scared, because the reality is that I'm really going. You know, so it's been a long time, it's before decades, so I can't help but be a little nervous.
Faheem has passed the time period for the governor to take action, and he's finally going home. From San Quentin Radio, I'm Nathan McKinney.
San Quentin Radio is a project in which KELW editors work with incarcerated men to produce journalism. You can listen to more stories. Go to KELW.org and click Prison Stories. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Now we'll head to California State Prison Solano in Vacaville, where KELW started a new radio program called Uncuffed.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
One of the students there has a life sentence without the chance of parole. He's also an internationally recognized poet. Spoon Jackson has won multiple awards for his poetry and even collaborated with singer Ani DeFranco. Let's hear an excerpt from Spoon Jackson's poem, Realness.
Realness eats raw meat and does not waver nor drifts on the currents. He has the staying power of the sun. Realness walks only in his own shoes.
Here's how Spoon thinks about poetry.
Well, poetry is a way of allowing your soul and heart to speak your life, to speak your feelings, to speak your love, your likes and dislikes by getting the I out of the way, the selfishness out of the way. Because in order to write poetry, you got to be infused from the muses, I believe. And everybody are not poets just because they put some lines down on a piece of paper. Poetry, it comes from a place of pureness, a place where, as a child, you used to be able to go to that you lost as you grew up.
Two of the producers in our class interviewed Spoon about his poetry. We'll start with Steve Drown. And when you add their time together, Spoon and Steve have spent more than 8 decades in various prisons.
What first got you into writing?
I started writing and just blew everybody away, my poetry. And so since that day, that was about 1986, I think it was, I haven't stopped writing since then. And poetry comes natural to me. I'm an organic poet.
How do you feel that creative writing, whether as a poet, a playwright, whatever, how do you feel that benefits us as convicts?
Well, when I taught creative writing up there at New Folsom for Arts and Corrections, I had this contact with professors out there on the streets, and they wanted to exchange. They was kind of like a highbrow neighborhoods and colleges, and we had our students exchange letters. And a lot of them kids out there didn't even think we were human. They said, prisoners write poetry. It blew them away. So I think knowing that we embrace some arts that same thing they do enables them to see us as human beings. And I think that's what's important about art, be you in prison or out on the streets. Art got to embrace people and got to let everybody know we can exchange places and still be human.
Right, right. And I think that happens with our writing. It also happens when we do our theater. The ability to create art in whatever form it is, that is the best therapy that we can have.
A rock, a dove, a part of me. Sometimes I just like being with a friend, sharing silence, a few sprinkles of water, a blackbird nesting in me, in every sprinkle, in every blackbird, the universe.
Joe Kirk, another of Spoon's classmates in our radio program, asks Spoon about his technique.
Do you have a method that you use when doing your poetry?
No, I just, whatever inspires me, be it a rock, tree, or I don't know, anything that's inspirational, mountains can inspire me. Something someone said, or a dream, I love dreams, and I think of Carl Jung and Sigmund Freud and Adler, and I think of a lot of the poets from the past, like Pablo Neruda, Langston Hughes, Maya Angelou, and Shakespeare, and they inspire me. A lot of my inspiration comes from dead poets.
Do you ever feel that you are different than everybody else?
Well, everybody's different. Everybody different than everybody else. Nobody sees things exactly the same. That's the beauty in being human, that, you know, we all connected on one level, but at the same time, we all individuals, and in that individuality, we learn how to be ourselves, and that enhances the whole human population. Because, you know, I don't think any humans, like, I think it was Socrates, somebody said, deliberately choose to do something that would harm themselves. They choose it because they think that will make their lives better.
Can you go ahead and tell me what type of books you like to read?
I love all kinds of reading, and I started reading a philosophy, psychology, and sociology when I first came to prison. And I wanted to make myself educated so that I could help people avoid coming to prison. Because when I came, I was sitting in the courtroom listening to the district attorney talk about me like I wasn't a human being, using words that I didn't understand. And so I told myself from that point on I would study the dictionary and take all the English and language and college classes I can and high school classes to make sure that no person ever talks above my head again just by using words I did not understand.
Just so everybody knows that you are an LWOP prisoner, that means life without the possibility of parole, correct?
Yeah.
Do you ever lose hope? Do you ever...
No, only hopeless people lose hope. No, but the thing is, let me see, I'll try this with this poem. Let me see if I can remember it. It's called Go On. I cannot go on like this, but I will go on and on, even when on is off. Something is stirring in my soul, wanting to burst out like a hot spring in the desert, wanting to come out. And I don't know what it is. In the moment, I hope it's a poem. I hope it's a song. Something vast like Euripides. Something wise and funny like Aristophanes. Something deep like Langston Hughes. So deep in the seas where no light goes. I know what it is. I want to create my way off this lockdown and write my way out of prison. They allowed redemption once, but now only condemnation. I cannot go on, but I will go on and on, even when on becomes off. Melancholic and sad, they are letting some lifers go home, some I have known for a lifetime, and that is a good thing. Yet there is no end in sight for me, and I don't know anymore where to go to get strength to go on. I don't know where to go to leave this sadness and pain and have my heart sing again and my spirit soar again. Everywhere I look, there's a big sign that says no. No forgiveness, no love, no hope, no second chance. no dreams, no romance. I cannot go on, but I will go on and on, even when on becomes off. But I have nowhere to go, nowhere that says yes. Yes is okay to dream, for some come true. Yes is okay to hope, for freedom is free. Yes is okay to love, for love can be true.
That was Spoon Jackson speaking with Steve Drown and Joe Kirk. Our radio training program at California State Prison Solano and San Quentin State Prison are supported by the California Arts Council with funding from the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to extended versions of those interviews with Spoon Jackson at our website, klw.org. That's also where you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter. The Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Nina Gensler-Debs, Sarah Coast, Angela Johnston, Maggie McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Gwynn, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are Tariq Foda, James Rollins, and Gabe Graben. Shireen Adil is our content manager. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.
Lipstick and pancakes.
This music is by San Mateo-born Tim Presley. His band, White Fence, will play with Ty Siegel tomorrow night at the New Parish in Oakland. Show starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.